Chapter 130. Something about the Kanakapers, a worthy young man, formerly a friend of mine. I speak of Kulu with all possible courtesy, since after our intimacy there would be an impropriety in doing otherwise. This worthy youth, having some genteel notions of retirement, dwelt in a aruboro, or breadfruit shade, a pretty nook in a wood, midway between the Calabuza Baratani and the Church of Cocoa Nuts. Hence, at the latter place, he was one of the most regular worshippers. Kulu was a blade, standing up in the congregation in all the bravery of a striped calico shirt, with the skirts rakishly adjusted over a pair of white sailor trousers, and hair well anointed with cocoa nut oil. He ogled the ladies with an air of supreme satisfaction. Nor were his glances unreturned, but such looks as the Tahitian belles cast at each other, frequently turning up their noses at the advent of a new cotton mantle recently imported in the chest of some amorous sailor. Upon one occasion, I observed a group of young girls, in tunics of coarse, soiled sheeting, disdainfully pointing at a damsel in a flaming red one. Et tu d'iori, said they with ineffable scorn, ita I matai. You are a good-for-nothing hussy, no better than you should be. Now, Kulu communed with the church, so did all these censorious young ladies. Yet after eating breadfruit at the Eucharist, I knew several of them, the same night, to be guilty of some sad derelictions. Puzzled by these things, I resolved to find out, if possible, what ideas, if any, they entertained of religion. But as one's spiritual concerns are rather delicate for a stranger to meddle with, I went to work as adroitly as I could. Farno, an old native who had recently retired from active pursuits, having thrown up the business of being a sort of running footman to the Queen, had settled down in a snug little retreat, not 50 rods from Captain Bob's. His selecting our vicinity for his residence may have been with some view to the advantages it afforded for introducing his three daughters into polite circles. At any rate, not averse to receiving the attentions of so devoted a gallant as the doctor, the sisters, communicants, be it remembered, kindly extended to him free permission to visit them sociably whenever he pleased. We dropped in one evening and found the ladies at home. My long friend engaged his favorites, the two younger girls, at the game of now, or hunting a stone under three piles of tapa. For myself, I lounged on a mat with Idia the eldest, dallying with her grass fan, and improving my knowledge of Tahitian. The occasion was well adapted to my purpose, and I began. Ah, Idia, Mikanariel, the same as drawling out why the bye, Miss Idia, do you belong to the church? Yes, me Mikanari, was the reply. But the assertion was at once qualified by certain reservations, so curious that I cannot forbear their relation. Mikanari in a church member here, exclaimed she, laying her hand upon her mouth, and a strong emphasis on the adverb. In the same way, and with similar exclamations, she touched her eyes and hands. This done, her whole air changed in an instant, and she gave me to understand, by unmistakable gestures, that in certain other respects she was not exactly a Icanery. In short, Idia was a sad good Christian at the heart, a very heathen in the carnal part. The explanation terminated in a burst of laughter, in which all three sisters joined, and for fear of looking silly, the doctor and myself, as soon as good breeding would permit, we took leave. The hypocrisy in matters of religion, so apparent in all Polynesian converts, is most injudiciously nourished in Tahiti by a zealous, and in many cases, a coercive superintendence over their spiritual well-being. But it is only manifested with respect to the common people, their superiors being exempted. On Sunday mornings, when the prospect is rather small for a full house in the minor churches, a parcel of fellows are actually sent out with ratans into the highways and byways as whippers-in of the congregation. This is a sober fact. These worthies constitute a religious police, and you always know them by the great white diapers they wear. On weekdays they are quite as busy as on Sundays, to the great terror of the inhabitants, going all over the island, and spying out the wickedness thereof. Moreover, they are the collectors of fines levied generally in grass mats for obstinate non-attendance upon divine worship, and other offenses amenable to the ecclesiastical judicature of the missionaries. Old Bob called these fellows Anacapers a corruption, I fancy, of our word constable. He bore them a bitter grudge, and one day, drawing near home, and learning that two of them were just then making a domiciliary visit at his house, he ran behind a bush, and as they came forth, two green breadfruit from a hand unseen took them each between the shoulders. The sailors in the Calabooza were witnesses to this, as well as several natives, who, when the intruders were out of sight, applauded Captain Bob's spirit in no measured terms, the ladies present vehemently joining in. Indeed, the Kanakapers have no greater enemies than the latter. And no wonder. The impertinent varlets, popping into their houses at all hours, are forever prying into their peccadillos. Kulu, who at times was patriotic and pensive, and mourned the evils under which his country was groaning, frequently inveighed against the statute which thus authorized another stranger to interfere with domestic arrangements. He himself, quite a ladies' man, had often been annoyed thereby. He considered the Kanakapers a bore. Beside their confounded inquisitiveness, they add insult to injury by making a point of dining out every day at some hut within the limits of their jurisdiction. As for the gentleman of the house, his meek endurance of these things is amazing. But who's easy man, there is nothing for him but to be as hospitable as possible. These gentry are indefatigable. At the dead of night prowling round the houses, and in the daytime hunting amorous couples in the groves. Yet in one instance the chase completely baffled them. It was thus. Several weeks previous to our arrival at the island, someone's husband and another person's wife, having taken a mutual fancy for each other, went out for a walk. The alarm was raised, and with hue and cry they were pursued. But nothing was seen of them again until the lapse of some 90 days, when we were called out from the Calabooza, to behold a great mob enclosing the lovers, and escorting them for trial to the village. Their appearance was most singular. The girdle excepted, they were quite naked, their hair was long, burned yellow at the ends, and entangled with burrs, and their bodies scratched and scarred in all directions. It seems that, acting upon the Ovine cottage principle, they had gone right into the interior, and throwing up a hut in an uninhabited valley, had lived there, until in an unlucky stroll they were observed and captured. They were subsequently condemned to make 100 fathoms of broom road, a 6 months' work, if not more. Often, when seated in a house, conversing quietly with its inmates, I have known them betray the greatest confusion at the sudden announcement of a Kanakapers being in sight. To be reported by one of these officials as a Udaiori in general, signifying a bad person or disbeliever in Christianity, is as much dreaded as the forefinger of Titus Gates was, leveled at an alleged papist. But the islanders take a sly revenge upon them. Upon entering a dwelling, the Kanakapers oftentimes volunteer a pharisaical prayer meeting. Hence, they go in secret by the name of Bura Archuas, literally, pray the gods. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.